A real earthquake hits Venezuela, even as the economic tremors continue. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Hyperinflation has sent prices soaring in Venezuela, forcing people to pay millions of bolivars for everyday things. This man describes the eye-watering prices.
The cheese used to cost 600 bolivars per kilo. Now it costs 7, 8 or 9 million. For instance, where I live, there's a lot of mafia in the food sector, so you have to decide if you buy things or not. Today, they have one price, and tomorrow, they will have another.
Well, this week, Venezuela devalued its currency, so those prices are nominally smaller. But the move has so far paralyzed the country as shops closed and people stayed home. The BBC's Daniel Garcia has just left his reporting post in Caracas, arriving in London a few days ago. He says the devaluation will help for now.
People feel that the situation is going to get worse and worse. The inflation is going to continue, so the prices are going to be higher and higher. So maybe your life is going to be easier now with the notes, but maybe in 6 months it's going to be the same problem. Your notes are going to be worthless again.
All of this pressure and grief is driving some people to try and leave the country. We've been hearing that in Brazil, they've sent troops to the border with Venezuela because of the numbers coming over.
Well, the less educated people are fleeing the country. If you don't have access to dollars, your life is very complicated because the salary is minimum. And outside Caracas, you do really need the cash because the electronic methods of payment are not so common.
So literally, you don't have enough local cash to buy food.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, President Maduro could get international help for this. The IMF and other institutions have frequently stepped in to help countries in great crisis, whether it's Argentina, Greece, Iraq. Why is that not happening in the case of Venezuela?
Well, we have to take into account that this is a so-called socialist and leftist government. They are against the IMF and against the U.S.
So it's an ideological opposition.
Sure. But of course, there is a financial problem, and they are trying to get help from Russia and China, which are big partners from Venezuela. But Russia and China are not ready to take so much risk.
They're happy to buy some Venezuelan oil, but not bail the country out.
Sure, this statu quo is good for Russia and China. The situation now is much convenient for them than a turmoil, change of regime or government.
You've been in London for a couple of days. You just left Caracas. Do you mind me asking, what are some of the things you've bought as you've landed here and gone, oh my God, finally, I can just get that thing?
Oh, milk. Milk.
Really?
Milk. It's really, really difficult to find proper milk in Caracas.
Daniel Garcia, enjoy your cereal this morning. Let's do the numbers. Global stocks are mostly higher as investors are poised today to mark the longest bull run in U.S. history, which started in March 2009. Meanwhile, U.S. sanctions on hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Russian imports go into effect today. They were imposed after a nerve agent attack against a British citizen and former Russian spy, Sergei Skripal, here in the U.K. Now, Facebook says it's disrupted a series of misinformation campaigns from Iran and Russia ahead of November's midterm elections. Twitter has also suspended nearly 300 accounts, apparently originating from Iran. Here's the BBC's Peter Bowes.
At face value, these accounts appear to be those of independent outlets. But in fact, Facebook says they were centrally controlled by Russia and Iran. A page could masquerade as having one purpose while really trying to drive a specific political agenda. And Facebook says that these pages targeted people across multiple internet services in the Middle East, Latin America, the UK, and the US.
Peter Bowes. It's peak tourist season in the Northern Hemisphere, but from Barcelona to Scotland, there's a backlash. The BBC's Scotland business editor, Douglas Fraser, reports from the Edinburgh Festival.
On Edinburgh's Royal Mile, lots of Edinburgh folk head into the crowds because they love the festival. But those who are commuting, not so much.
Being in the centre of the town, it's not, it's just chaos. Absolute chaos.
One of the smaller hotspots is the village of Doon near Stirling. Doon Castle was used for filming not only Monty Python's Holy Grail, but the historic fantasy TV series Outlander. That's made it a vital stop for visitors along some very narrow roads, often blocking off part of the village where Linda Butlin lives. She runs her own small bed and breakfast establishment there, but she's no friend of tourism on the scale outside her front door.
People might say we should be grateful that it is bringing business into the village, but I think it might be changing the village. What it's doing is changing my life a little bit, my neighbours' lives. We all breathe a sigh of relief in the winter when it stops.
For the industry back in Scotland, there's a concern that this talk of over-tourism is overblown and that there's too much negativity about part of the economy going rather well. Willie McLeod is Scottish Director of UK Hospitality, the trade body.
Well, I think over-tourism is a pejorative term, really. I mean, we've got to be very careful that we don't give visitors any impression that they're not welcome. I think the concern would be if that hostility was overt and it damaged our reputation. We have a huge reputation internationally in Scotland of being hospitable and of welcoming people. So I think we've got to be very careful that we don't give any impression that visitors are not welcome. Quite the opposite.
Willie McLeod there, ending that report by Douglas Fraser. And here in London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.